Truth News Radio Australia on the 6th of June 2015. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show, folks. Today I'm going to return to a subject which I've been covering quite a bit, and it's about the raft of new laws and freedom eroding legislations that have just come through really quite recently, and adding that to the history, the sordid history of the erosion of our basic rights in Australia. But some good news is that people within the system are opposing these draconian measures, and I've got a report to read to you from Gillian Triggs, head of the Human Rights Commission. And the important thing to understand here is that, you know, the changes that have been brought through in our laws that are supposedly for national security are, by any definition, an attack on basic principles of democracy and freedom. And anyone with a clear and open mind can see that. And we have to keep that at the forefront of our mind, because you will be continually led astray by the way this type of thing is normalized and is kind of brought into simply being seen as, oh, well, that's the way things are these days. So I've got a report here from the ABC. Human Rights Commission Chief Gillian Triggs refuses to back down and criticizes the foreign fighter data retention laws that expand ministerial powers. Head of Australian Human Rights Commission, Professor Gillian Triggs, has criticised new counter-terrorism laws as a growing threat to democracy. Now, Gillian Triggs has been under attack by the government for her position on another topic, which is that of the boat people, and she's actually linked back the turn back of people on boats to the execution of the Bali Nine, and the government has attacked her on that, saying that that's outrageous and not true, although that's another subject that I think is actually very interesting. But of course the boat people issue is always one that is used as a smokescreen to basically muddy the waters, to confuse people, and the boat people issues are important, but really The real game is what's actually happening with our basic principles of law and democracy. And they are being deliberately attacked, deliberately eroded. And one only wonders, you know, what is the ultimate objective here? What are we heading towards? What kind of society are we heading towards? Now, I have a speech given by Gillian Triggs before an audience of human rights lawyers in Melbourne. And here she set her sights on a raft of national security legislation that has been passed by successive governments since the September 11 attacks in the United States. Professor Triggs told the forum a growing threat to democracy was the diminishing of human rights and expansion of discretionary, often non-compellable, ministerial powers. Respective governments have been successful in persuading parliaments to pass laws that are contrary, even explicitly contrary, to common law rights and to the international human rights regime to which Australia is a party. So very strong words, and you know, very important to see this now coming into the public arena. I mean, we haven't had nearly enough of this. Let's hope that there, this is not simply going to be one of those little things that comes and goes, and we are then left back with a normalisation of this path to tyranny. So I want to play to you a clip from the speech by Gillian Triggs. So I'll play a little of it and perhaps interrupt it as we go. Here we go.
The head of Australia's human rights watchdog remains defiant today despite another attack on her by the federal government. The government has taken umbrage at Gillian Triggs' more recent comments about Australia's policy on asylum seekers and Indonesia's refusal to negotiate over the death penalty. Yesterday, the Immigration Minister Peter Dutton and the Attorney General George Brandis labelled comments by Gillian Triggs as a poorly informed, foolish, offensive, outrageous slur and demanded an apology from her. But before an audience of human rights lawyers in Melbourne last night, Professor Triggs did not step back from her comments. Instead, she set her sights on laws which she says go too far, harming democracy and civil liberties. Our reporter Simon Lauder went along to the gathering, which began with some lampooning of the situation.
Yes, it's the night of nights for those who spend their days defending human rights.
The latest dispute between the president of the Human Rights Commission and the Abbott government was rich fodder for the MC, Casey Bonetto.
'Cause if George Brandis shows Gillian Triggs and they start trading blows.
The gathering of human rights lawyers was a refuge for the keynote speaker.
It's been another of those days, and I'm so pleased to be in the company of friends tonight.
Showing defiance in the face of furor, Professor Triggs set her sights on the lack of parliamentary restraint in Australia.
Supremacy of the law over the sovereign, or in today's parlance, executive government, is under threat in our democracy.
Professor Triggs accuses successive parliaments of introducing laws that diminish democratic rights and expand executive power. She singles out the federal government's plan to strip citizenship from foreign fighters.
The overreach of executive power is clear in the yet-to-be-defined proposal that those accused of being jihadists fighting against Australian interests will be stripped of their citizenship if they're potentially dual citizens.
She says counter-terrorism laws were passed with unseemly haste, including the Foreign Fighters Act.
Freedom of movement is threatened by the same act.
The human rights chief also criticises data retention laws, a recent bill giving detention centre guards powers of enforcement, and the indefinite detention of some asylum seekers. It's a bold speech, considering what the Immigration Minister Peter Dutton had been demanding only hours earlier.
Professor Triggs needs to front the cameras today to retract this outrageous slur.
These are the comments that so outraged the government, recorded earlier this week.
Have we thought about what the consequences are of pushing people back to our neighbours, Indonesia? Is it any wonder that Indonesia will not engage with us on other issues that we care about, like the death penalty?
Professor Triggs has only addressed that dispute in writing so far, with a statement saying her remarks were misreported and stressing that she did not refer to the executed Australians Andrew Chan and Muran Sukumaran. She has support from the President of the Court of Appeal of Victoria, Justice Chris Maxwell, who calls the attack on Professor Triggs despicable.
Tonight, we have been privileged to have amongst us one of our foremost warriors. As we have been pleased to see, Gillian, you might be bloodied, but you are certainly unbowed.
Now, it is very encouraging to see someone like this coming onto the stage in Australia, and I haven't really been familiar with the work of Gillian Triggs, but I think she looks like she might be the real deal. And I want to play to you from a longer speech that she gave about 9 months ago, which gets into some of the boat people issues that we were talking about before. And the title of this speech is Building a Culture of Human Rights, Creating a Human Rights Culture in Australia. And honestly, this is a really, really important subject. And it's something that actually can unite people, I believe, across the political spectrum, because these are things that we can all agree on. Now, I do understand that there are a lot of people who have somewhat been suckered in to the position in regard to refugees that, we're being flooded with refugees and we've got to defend our nation's sovereignty because, you know, this is, you know, what we do as a country. We stop people just randomly coming in. And I've said this on the show many times. This viewpoint is a completely manipulated, false view. The refugee numbers in Australia are minuscule compared to other countries. It does not propose a big problem for Australian society. And it is within the the standard practices of all countries that honour basic human rights to give asylum to people who are fleeing from terrible situations overseas. And to make it worse, they're often fleeing from situations that were created by wars which our own governments were involved in. So there is also a degree of responsibility. Unfortunately, a lot of people in Australia who are kind of on the right track in some respects. They want to, they know that there are problems with government power. They know that a lot of the government policies are wrong. They fear the one world government. They fear the centralization of power. And these are all things to be concerned about. But in being manipulated into taking this hardline stand against refugees, they are really completely suckered. It is a red herring. It is used to divide people. So let me just play to you now some of the speech that Gillian Triggs gave a bit less than a year ago at Southern Cross University. And this is quite long. I may have to interrupt it at the various points, but I think it's well worth listening. And you know, like listeners to this show, to be aware of what is going on in Australia, in a positive sense, to try and address some of the problems we have. And of course, she's going to get into a lot more topics than just the boat people one, but that is one of the key ones. Here we go.
I really am pleased to have the opportunity to talk to you about a subject which I think is becoming increasingly important, and that is the need to create or recreate a human rights culture. And in doing that, I am also very pleased to be able to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and to respect their elders past and present. Well, we've had an almost unprecedented debate in the last few months and last couple of years, broadly termed the Freedom Wars, in which the idea of a human rights culture for Australia has become a very important one, especially as I'd suggest to you that the human rights culture is a declining one in Australia, that our citizens are ill-informed about their rights, our political leaders denigrate those who claim their rights, and we have a growing culture of apathy in the face of a growing ministerial executive exercise of discretion, which is neither compellable nor reviewable, where we have a veil of secrecy drawn across crucial matters on the purported ground of national security, but a ground not subject to review. In short, I believe that the rule of law, and particularly human rights law in Australia, is significantly under threat. Well, that's a fairly powerful way to begin. Now I better explain to you why I'm so concerned about this and why I think Professor Goh's a proposal for this conference is really such a pertinent and important one, and I think hopefully will generate some change.
OK, I'll just pause it there. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm playing to you a clip here by Gillian Triggs, of the President of the Australian Human Rights Commission. And I'm going to continue this when we come back from the break, so do stay with us. Back here with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm playing to you a speech here today given by Gillian Triggs, President of the Australian Human Rights Commission, in July 2014, and it gets into some very important topics. These are things that I believe in very passionately, and it's one of the main reasons why I do this show. So I do hope you enjoy this. I'm going to continue this for most of the show today, give you a break from listening to my voice, and hope that you find something interesting in this speech by Gillian Triggs. So just continuing now from the lecture given at the Southern Cross University.
And I'd just like to explore with you the exceptionist, if not unique, nature of the way in which Australia goes about protecting its human rights. But I'd like to give you some examples of why I've taken such a strong view on these questions. Obviously, of course, is the question of mandatory detention of about 4,500 asylum seekers in Australia in closed mandatory detention for many years, and now it seems we have about 153 floating around on a patrol ship somewhere in the high seas with no access to trials or legal advice or any assistance whatsoever. We also have an increased use of the right of arbitrary and administrative detention in order to deal with the risk of anti-terrorism laws that allow detention for 14 days without charge. Certainly, of course, the state has a right of national security defence, but we have now strong advice from major lawyers in Australia, Brett Walker in particular, that we now have a legacy of old anti-terrorism laws that are far disproportionate to any real risk. We have legislation that imposes mandatory detention and reduces the principle of an independent judiciary. We have children under 18 being detained in adult prisons, typically including a disproportionate number of Indigenous youths. We have, if I can say so in this company, a threat to the right of freedom of association with new Queensland laws to deal with bikie gangs, a matter in which the Australian Human Rights Commission is intervening in the High Court. We have a willingness of governments prepared to suspend the Race Discrimination Act for practices to deal with Indigenous communities without consultation with those communities. And we have the cause célèbre, the Andrew Bolt case, where the right to freedom of expression is said to be at risk where we bring a civil action for racial abuse in public. Well, some people argue that Australia has become a nanny state that unnecessarily restricts individual autonomy. They reject treaties setting out universal norms of human rights. They reject the findings of the United Nations Human Rights Monitoring Committees and ignore the concerns of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. These libertarians look to the traditional common law of Australia and to Parliament to safeguard our Australian freedoms. Others recognise the international human rights law and the adoption, as John has, and your Chancellor has pointed out, adopted under the feisty Doc Evatt in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And these stress the rights of the individual to protection from unlimited or almost unlimited executive power. Well, the abstract nature of these debates doesn't make for a good one-liner for the media, but we do have an engagement of the abstract with the very particular very recently, because in the last few days we've seen yet another Tampa-like standoff with asylum seekers on the high seas, and one boat of 41 Sinhalese from Sri Lanka having been intercepted, arguably illegally, on the high seas by Australian patrol officials, with the 3 to 4 video questions asked to meet their legal right to have their claims assessed. Another boat left Londonderry in southern India with 153 Tamils on board, also seeking asylum. They've also been intercepted, if not on the high seas, in the contiguous zone, where they have attempted to take their chances and place themselves in the hands of people smugglers. We don't know what's going to happen to these people, and one of the reasons we don't know is that a government won't tell us what is happening in relation to them. But we have a curious situation this time in which neither the Sri Lankan government nor the Indian government will take the boat back. And interestingly, we have a High Court injunction which has brought some facts to light that would otherwise not be available to us had it not been for that intervention in the High Court. In the meantime, the UNHCR and the Human Rights Council have expressed their concerns about our turning back the boat's policies, offshore detention, and the risk of returning asylum seekers to the state of persecution in violation of absolutely fundamental principles of international law developed, as the Chancellor has said, in those years after the Second World War. And I, of course, well remember that marvellous movie, Exodus, where the Jewish refugees were brought into Palestine, a film and a memory that doesn't go away. And I quite take your point that we do need these visual images when we're so it's so easy to put the image of a boat on the high seas with 153 people on it out of our minds. Well, the question that I really want to look at today is, how is it that Australian law permits the mandatory detention of asylum seekers, the turning back of boats, the refusal to abide by the principles of refugee law, or can so seriously suggest that we amend the Race Discrimination Act to allow the racial abuse of individuals in Australia in the public arena without any serious restraint. There are gaps in the law, and I'll address some of them, but I think the key answer to the question, why is Australia so exceptional and even unique, is the question we need to answer. For relative to comparable legal systems, we have very few constitutional or legislative protection for fundamental freedoms in Australia. We have, as you know, a constitutional right to vote, and we have a constitutional right of freedom of religion adopted by the founding fathers in order to prevent a religion to be established rather than necessarily a right of individual freedom of religion, but it was expressed in that way, and we have that protection. We also have the High Court implied right of political communication, but that is all. We have no Bill of Rights, we have no Charter of Rights, unlike all our comparable jurisdictions in Europe, Canada, the United States, and even our cousins across the Tasman in New Zealand. The absence of constitutional provisions or other guiding Charter of Rights, we do have some legislation prohibiting discrimination, protecting privacy, employment rights, and criminal trial procedures, and ensuring that administrative powers are exercised fairly. It's for that reason, then, that we have a tendency in Australia to emphasise anti-discrimination laws rather than the fundamental principles that are core. But let's start at the beginning, and I'm going to go back even further than the Chancellor has done, from the Universal Declaration in 1948 back to the Magna Carta, 800 years ago, and you know that we're going to be celebrating 800 years next year, and it really is interesting, if you take the time to go back and look at the Magna Carta, you'll find buried in all the laws about the rights to own pigs or what your feudal dues were, King John was forced by his feudal barons to agree that fundamentally no man may be detained arbitrarily without charge and trial by his peers. Buried in the middle of the Magna Carta is a principle that has been absolutely core to the English common law system, to our common law system, and to the principles of virtually any legal system, civil or common, that's developed in the world. Those principles were picked up, of course, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and led to the creation of the body of international human rights law that we're so familiar with now, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the CEDAW Convention with regard to sexual discrimination, the Convention on Disability, Persons with Disabilities, the Convention Against Torture, and, of course, the seminal Convention Against Discrimination on the Grounds of Race. But the critical point in trying to understand the culture and now declining culture of human rights in Australia is that despite Australia playing a dominant role in the negotiation and creation of those treaties, led in part by Doc Everett, but picked up by every government on a bipartisan basis since that time.
We are just going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm playing to you today a lecture given by Gillian Triggs, President of the Australian Human Rights Commission. And getting into the exceptionalism of Australian law, and this term exceptionalism, of course, evokes many things that have been said about the US in terms of its approach to international law. And, of course, Australia has followed along in the wake of the United States in so many ways. But this idea of exceptionalism is something that seems to be intrinsic to the imperial power base of our modern world, i.e. those countries which see themselves as being, which sort of have taken on the mantle of being like the superior countries. Of course, this is never fully admitted, but it's implied that the countries that have taken on the mantle of being like the way, the light and the truth of democracy and civilization grant themselves all kinds of privileges and they can consider themselves exceptional. And so they are actually able to not be fully subject to the laws that that they deem necessary for the rest of the world to follow. It's fascinating, isn't it? But it's really a hallmark of an imperial view of the world as I see it. But anyway, just I'll continue now with the speech from Gillian Triggs. She's going to get into more interesting and important topics for freedom and expression in Australia.
We've ratified those treaties, but in the main, we have never introduced them into Australian law. And that is the curiosity of the Australian legal system. Of course, we know why you must have treaties implemented in domestic law. Our diplomats can't go off to an international conference and agree on terms of a treaty and sign the final act with cameras and flowers and red carpets and come back with that treaty and say that's now part of Australian law. The democratic system, of course, is one in which the Parliament must give effect to that treaty in domestic law. But the curiosity in Australia has been that, for the most part, these major conventions have never been introduced into Australian law. We do have laws, as I've said, on race, on sex, on disability, although that was preceded by our own domestic legislation before the international agreement. And we have legislation on sex discrimination in a context in which there is no treaty. But all the other treaties and the key ones, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Economic and Social Rights, Convention on the Child and Convention Against Torture, are not part of Australian law. There is therefore a resulting disconnect between our international obligations and our national laws that reflects the highly ambivalent approach that Australia has taken to human rights. But in light of the failure to make those rights directly part of Australian law, how is it that in practice we should accept and recognise that Australia has generally met a high standard of human rights compliance and that we have had a good reputation and well-deserved reputation as good international citizens? Well, the answer does lie in a more sophisticated or nuanced understanding of the way Australian law works. To the extent that we have respected human rights, it's reflected the culture that demands fundamental freedoms. It's a bit of a cliche to talk about the insistence on the fair go, but most Australians get that, and they'll interpret what they mean by a fair go in their own ways, and sometimes use the language of human rights. They insist on tolerance and equality of opportunity. But we've also relied in building the culture in Australia on a mix of judicially developed common law principles of legality, particularly through the High Court, and particularly, I might say, by the current Chief Justice Robert French. We have a system of parliamentary scrutiny of bills. We have principles of administrative law, of due process and natural justice. And we have the monitoring and complaints functions of the Australian Human Rights Commission. In short, Australia implements human rights in a multifaceted way, using the institutions of modern democracy to ensure a normative culture in which human rights are, for the most part, respected. But my thesis today is that the exceptionalism of Australia among comparable legal nations to protect human rights has been effective in creating an environment in which Australians will cheerfully assert the right to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, fair trial or property without ever being able to point to a specific constitutional or legislative provision. It is, however, I believe, a current situation in which that normative culture is fading and it's fracturing because many groups are not adequately protected and worrying trends are appearing. I, of course, am most concerned in relation to asylum seekers, but I think you'll appreciate that laws which allow non-compellable and non-reviewable ministerial powers in relation to migration under the Migration Act are equally at play in relation to discretions on a range of things. Particularly, we have been discovering at the Human Rights Commission over the last few months, hundreds of people detained administratively where they have mental illness and have not been fit to plead. And we are discovering instances in which people have been held for 10, 15, 20 years without ever having their matter before a court, and where it's simply assumed that they can be incarcerated. I'd like to, for a moment then, to speak very briefly about the role of our common law courts, because they do protect our fundamental principles through the notion of legality. And that by that they adopt certain presumptions, including that Parliament does not intend to interfere with fundamental rights regarding criminal trial procedures, freedom of association, and a main presumption, very important, that Parliament does not intend to violate international law. Indeed, the High Court of Australia has said everybody is free to do anything, subject only to the provisions of the law. And senior judges have acknowledged the power of the courts. The Chief Justice in New South Wales, for example, has talked about the power of the courts to speak in a way that resonates with the norms, values, and indeed the soul of the Australian community. The great challenge, however, and this is perhaps not always understood by the Australian community as lawyers will understand it, is that unless the statute or law is ambiguous or unclear, those presumptions of legality or presumptions of compliance with international law have no relevance. In other words, if wherever there is a statute, that statute will always trump either the common law or a sense that we can look to the international legal standards to which Australia is a party. And this has been the core problem in relation to the Migration Act. We have now an almost historical battle between the great judge Cook and James I in the modern environment for the High Court, with a battle in case after case after case between the government attempting to apply the Migration Act and frequently amend it in highly complex amendments to that law, which strip away the core freedoms and give the minister ever-growing discretion. And where possible, the High Court has to consider whether or not there are any principles which can constrain the power of the minister. So we have a battle that's emerging now over the last few years in the area of migration law, a battle that, of course, used to be conducted between Chief Justice Barwick and the government over tax law. We now see in this area of human rights law. And the High Court is very profoundly constrained by what it can do for the reasons that I've just outlined. Most of the relevant international human rights law is not part of our law. We don't have constitutional and legislative provisions. And we have a fundamental provision, of course, in a parliamentary democracy, that the courts are bound by unambiguous and clear laws passed by Parliament. Now, you would say that's all consistent with a democracy in which Parliament is sovereign and represents the people. If Parliament says this is the law in the statute, then it's appropriate that our judges apply it where it's done unambiguously. But we're in an era now where we have hung parliaments, we have governments that are not that dissimilar from each other, or in the case of asylum seeker law, governments competing with each other to produce the most draconian and inappropriate laws, contrary to international law. So what do you do in a modern democracy when you have bipartisan laws going through Parliament, particularly in relation to the Migration Act, but maybe in other areas as well that we'll explore?
You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break. Do stay with us. Very interesting lecture today I'm bringing you from Emeritus Professor Gillian Triggs. We'll be right back.
happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point,
hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I've been bringing you today a speech by Gillian Triggs, President of the Human Rights Commission. This is in the context of an ongoing kind of scandal in the media because Gillian Triggs, I believe she looks like one of the sort of people that gets into a role who actually takes it seriously. And normally governments expect the people in these roles to more or less dance to their tune, to provide cover, to make it look as if they are doing the right thing when they need it, but to certainly hold off and stand back in regard to critical matters that might embarrass the government or might dig too deep into issues of true, you know, rights abuses in our country. This is the problem with the whole politicised, sort of tokenised way in which the people are appointed to simply represent our interests. You know, someone who works for the government is just appointed to be the Human Rights Commissioner. I mean, in relation to data retention, the Data Retention Act, they've actually created a new position called the Data Retention Ombudsman, whose job it is to protect your rights as a citizen. Now, this is like an anonymous person who sits and communicates between ASIO and the government and the Attorney General and Signals Intelligence to basically advocate your rights for you. Basically, the whole thing's flawed. But every now and then, you do get someone in these types of roles who actually really takes it seriously, who has integrity. And I do believe that Gillian Triggs is such a person. Now, just recently, she gave a very powerful lecture in Melbourne in which she took on the whole history of erosion of our basic freedoms in Australia since September 11. And this has been reported on in The Guardian as well. I've got an article here. Gillian Triggs slams scores of laws threatening fundamental freedoms. Australian parliaments have passed scores of laws that fundamentally threat human rights and freedoms. And she warns MPs to uphold the rule of law as they prepare to debate extraordinary ministerial powers to revoke citizenship. Now, in the context of all this, it's important to understand that Gillian Triggs has incurred the wrath of the Abbott government. They have been trying to get rid of her now for several months. She was quietly asked to resign her position earlier this year. And this was in relation to an inquiry she did about children in detention. They really don't like her. And as a result, she seems to be kind of hardening up and really coming to grips with deeper issues in our very, very parlous democracy, that where we are routinely just sacrificing so many important principles that govern any rule of law in any democracy, in any civilized nation. Now, in the Guardian article, there's quite a lot more detail from the lecture that was given, which is not currently available in any audio format. So I'm actually just going to read to you from the Guardian article here, where it says, Triggs spoke at length about the significant expansion of counter-terrorism powers in Australia on the grounds of community safety, arguing the strength of the rule of law was more truly tested when security is threatened than in times of peace. To the extent that Australia is threatened by terrorism, the need to protect our traditional liberties and freedoms assumes an even greater urgency, she said. Many laws introduced with unseemly haste before Christmas in the name of national security go well beyond what might be deemed necessary, creating a chilling effect on freedom of speech and the press and breaching the right to privacy. Referring to the data retention laws passed with bipartisan support in March, Triggs said it was curious that a journalist information warrant was required to access the call logs of a reporter, but such a warrant was not needed for agencies to look at other citizens' metadata. And this is something that I have commented on too, and it's really quite extraordinary and outrageous that they've introduced this special little protection for one class of citizens. And you know, they've only done it as a PR stunt. They've done it because some people spoke up about it, some journalists got up in arms about it, and they said, okay, here, we'll placate you, we'll give you this little protection. It's ludicrous, because every citizen requires the same protections, not just journalists. Just continuing here. As the metadata will be collected in respect of most of the 23 million Australians, and those involved in terrorism or paedophilia are very few, it might be said that the Act employs a sledgehammer to crack a nut, she said. Triggs also raised concerns that accused persons would face an evidentiary burden to defend themselves against a 10-year prison sentence for entering declared areas listed by the Foreign Affairs Minister under the Foreign Fighters Act. She said the same act introduced a new offence of advocating terrorism, an imprecise crime whose scope may cover, for example, opposing the Assad regime in Syria or supporting Palestinian efforts to gain statehood. Other national security laws passed this year created an offence punishable by up to 10 years in jail for disclosing information about a special intelligence operation, which was likely to have a chilling effect on legitimate public debate about security operations. The overreach of executive power is clear in the yet-to-be-defined proposal that those accused of being jihadists fighting against Australian interests will be stripped of their citizenship if they are potentially dual nationals. This proposal strikes at the heart of Australia as a largely migrant nation. Not only may this idea violate Australia's international obligation not to render a person stateless, but also the decision may be at the discretion of a minister without recourse to judicial processes. And it makes a mockery of the concept of citizenship. If you've been granted citizenship, that should be inviolable. I mean, mistakes can be made, sure. You know, and citizens can be bad people. You know, just because you're born in Australia doesn't mean you're going to be a good person. So this idea that you can revoke citizenship of one class of people but not another is, again, ludicrous and outrageous. At least to make it consistent, they should revoke citizenship of people who were born in Australia too if you've committed some terrible crime. Why not? Of course, they can't do it. They can't make a person stateless. They can get away with this. It's a PR stunt, but it is such an erosion of the principles of what citizenship even stand for. Just continuing now with the article. This proposal is not new. It follows a bill introduced last year to give the minister discretion to revoke citizenship for fraud or misrepresentation, where the minister is satisfied that a person is not of good character, all without trial or conviction. The debate, it seems, is between the subjective suspicions of a minister versus an evidence-based determination by a judge according to established rule of law. The Coalition has faced criticism from legal experts over its citizenship proposals ahead of the introduction of a bill during the sitting of Parliament that would allow the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, to target dual nationals. The government deferred a decision on a related proposal to allow the minister to also revoke the citizenship of sole nationals who might be able to apply for citizenship elsewhere following a cabinet backlash. The Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, said the government subscribed to the very clear principle that anyone who raises a gun or a knife to an Australian because of who we are has utterly forfeited any right to be considered one of us. But the criteria and procedure for such ministerial determinations remains unclear because the legislation is yet to be released. Before she delivered her speech on Friday about the need for parliaments to meet their obligations as a check on executive government, Triggs was strongly criticised by Dutton for earlier comments about the consequences of turning asylum seeker boats back towards Indonesia. She was reported by the Australian newspaper to have said, "Is it any wonder that Indonesia will not engage with us on other issues that we care about, like the death penalty?" Trigg's office says she was reflecting on the death penalty in the region broadly, rather than specific cases. But Dutton said it was an outrageous slur to link the death of two of the Bali Nine drug smugglers to Australia's asylum seeker policy. Well, interestingly, you know, I've actually come to a similar conclusion looking at the situation with the Bali Nine, and the Indonesian government has hinted at this very strongly, that Australia's position on turning back the boats is not going to help them with legal matters in Indonesia, with people who are in prison in Indonesia. They've actually said it. So it's just interesting that we've reached this point now where one of the government's own appointed people, whose job it is to represent matters of truth and justice, is basically being attacked by the government for basically doing the job too well. It's indicative of how far we have slid. Now, of course, the Labor Party is making a big deal of this, trying to gain political ground. But as we all know, the Labor Party, if and when it regains power, will tend to just fall into the same patterns. What we need is people standing up for the truth, and I believe Gillian Triggs is one of those. So that's our show for this week, folks. Live listeners will have a repeat of one of our interviews, and I will be back next week. See you then.